Dr. Paul, welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. Today's lead interview is with pediatrician Dr. Kamli Yura. She lived half her life in the Soviet Union. We are discussing, first of all, her being terminated from her position over the COVID issue. Secondly, the evolution of her thinking as a pediatrician since the beginning of the COVID pandemic. Parents, grandparents, custodians of children, you know or you've heard they're recommending COVID jabs for children. There's a lot of information that should have you questioning that recommendation. We're going to discuss a lot of this. The issue of asymptomatic spread, use of vitamins, masking, natural immunity, mental health, and then she closes out with her hopes for the future and a message for you, the parents and grandparents. Bernadette and I discussed something that, wow, this is powerful. Don't miss this at the end of this show. There are captured agencies, way more than I realized, who influence our public health officials, our legislators, and the medical boards. This is powerful information that will wake you up to what's actually going on behind the scenes that's driving some of the insanity that we're experiencing in our world since the COVID pandemic began. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. I have a daily reminder on my calendar that says this: if I wasn't afraid, I would. And then I'm supposed to start my day by filling in the blank. I had the hardest time with this. It was just something I've been trying this past month because I didn't want to be focusing on fear, like being afraid. Well, I was taking a walk in the woods recently and this came to me and it really helped me. Embrace all things that help me reach my purpose and potential, and reject those things that are hindering my progress. Now that opened up my world for me to be able to really do that. I mean, we all have things we know we should be doing. We ought to embrace those. And if there's things that are hindering our progress, we should be avoiding those things, right? This isn't a moment for true confessions, but I found it really helpful. The other thing I've been really trying to do is to ask myself three questions regarding my thoughts, my words, and my actions. Is what I'm doing loving and kind? Because if it's not, I'm probably acting from ego or from fear. I hope you have someone in your life that can call you on it. If you're drifting into ego and fear, I'm blessed to have such a person today in my life, and it's made a world of difference. Because I think I lived in ego a lot, unaware, not even aware that that's what I was doing. Second question, again, regarding your thoughts, words, and actions, is it true? Now, truth, I tend to think is singular, but you know, your truth might be different than my truth. And so we do need to meet each other somewhere and allow ourselves to disagree. We can just agree to disagree. But there's so much misinformation, disinformation, and propaganda out there these days that it is imperative that we listen to your heart and soul, feel what resonates. Does it feel true? Does it feel right to you? Because if it's not feeling right, if you're listening carefully and it doesn't feel right, dig a little deeper. There's probably a deeper truth that you need to discover. The third question I like to ask is it helpful? Now, is it helpful to your physical health, your mental health, your emotional health, and your spiritual health? If it's helpful, embrace it, right? And if it's not, maybe take a second look at that. Folks, it's about faith over fear. And while that may be a saying that we say too often, it's so true. If I'm living in fear, I'm an ego, I'm not open, I'm not in the spirit, I'm not living in love. Have a blessed week. Welcome, Dr. Yura. You are a pediatrician. We have something in common. We have both lived a large portion of our lives outside of the United States. Maybe share with our viewers your background and when you came to the United States. I'd be interested in learning that.
Well, hello, everyone. Yes, my name is Dr. Yura, and I grew up in Soviet Union. It was kind of end of Soviet Union empire. But now as I look back, really, you know, to go to school, you had to wear uniforms. You had to be a pioneer. you know, and then you had to have those passports, you know, and you had to have Komsomol passport. So you can imagine here you are a kid, you kind of look around and you're trying to figure out the world. And I always was a very introverted kid. So I kind of was looking what's happening. And really what affected me the most growing up in Soviet Union was this inability to speak freely and inability to travel freely. And my grandfather was a lawyer in independent Lithuania. And so he saved 5 Jews in the basement where I grew up as a child. And then he kind of didn't want to leave Lithuania, and Soviets put him in prison. And so I was, as a small child, looking at this very intellectual man, kind of broken by the system, you know, because he believed in humanity, he believed in human kindness. And being idealistic, I thought, okay, it's clear I cannot be a lawyer. I wrote quite good. But then as I was writing the articles for the newspapers, they were not published because, for example, I reviewed the book of the writer and he immigrated. And they said, no, you cannot be published. Okay, I was like, okay, that's out. Lawyers is out. So what is in? And I thought, you know, as a medical profession, I can be free of politics. Or it's not true, as we know right now, but that was really why I went to study medicine, because I thought I can be free and I can heal people.
So how old were you when you immigrated to the United States?
So I finished high school still in Soviet Union, and I entered medical school, you know, and start studying really very, you know, how you study in medical school, 7 to 7, you know. And then I remember I was sitting at my forensic medicine exam, and I knew all the answers, and that's what I was caring about. And the our professor came in and said, no exam, you have to stand in front of tanks. I was like, what do you mean? You know, so it's kind of like, so we went, all of us went, and I was standing in front of, you know, parliament, and some of my classmates were standing in front of TV station. So we were like, I think it was 5th year of medical school, because in Lithuania and in medical universities, we had 6 years. And now suddenly, collapsed. It collapsed like kind of in front of our eyes. Then looking back, you could see signs coming. And then people start inviting medical students to America, because before that it was closed. You couldn't travel. So in Madison, Wisconsin, people were sitting in front of MAP and said, let's invite 5 medical students to see from this empire, to see if we can help them to show free world. And that's how I came first time. I still flew from Soviet Union with Soviet passport as an exchange student to Madison, Wisconsin, met very beautiful people of America. And as soon as I saw medical students here, I said, I want to do this. I want to be free. I'll do anything to be a doctor in America.
Yeah.
12 years later, that happened.
Wow. That's an incredible story. I finished high school in Swaziland. So I grew up in Africa. I was in Rhodesia, what now is Zimbabwe, went to high school in Swaziland, came to the States for college and then medical school. And your journey was a little longer because of, you know, I know how it is when you come to the States, you have to start all over with your education. So you get a double education.
And, you know, I was really idealistic. I thought I will earn, you know, whatever Vilnius University will taught me. And then I will learn everything that people are teaching me here, and I'll be this best doctor ever. Then I realized, actually, as I was going through all these processes, how much similarity was between United States and Soviet Union. And that actually was kind of shocking for me. And, you know, even like this multi-choice exam, how much it was eliminating critical thinking. In a way, back in Soviet system, I had to know how to answer the questions depending who was asking the question. But again, in this multi-choice system, you eliminate the critical thinking, because as soon as you think too much, you're wrong.
Yeah.
And so that was really, I had to learn. So, you know, I passed all these exams. I passed all these American pediatric board exams. And finally, I thought I can kind of practice how I want within, you know, the corporation system. Right. And I kind of practice similar like you write in your book. I would ask patients what did they wanted to, and I would give them informed consent. Mm-hmm. But my first big questioning started when they start doing hepatitis B vaccine, and I start creating my own protocols. I was like, and I told my patients, I said, I don't see why you would get it. So, you know, the questions start happening even before these 2 years. But I really didn't see all of this coming. I didn't think it will be as dangerous to kids as it is right now.
Yeah. So why did you choose pediatrics?
In that, I always wanted to heal kids. You know, my childhood was, you know, my parents are post-war trauma-affected parents. Mm-hmm. Grandparents, my grandmother actually witnessed World War I and World War II. I always felt that we can kind of help kids to be happy and look at their trauma, help them to heal and be happy adults. I was really very hesitant between, you know, child psychiatry and pediatrics. Mm-hmm. Never I questioned the way they wanted to teach medical doctors to be child psychiatrists. I still question it now, even now with the shortage of child psychiatrists, because, you know, you have to go to transitional year, and I did transitional year. Then you have to do 3 years of, you know, adult psychiatry and then go to child psychiatry. Mm-hmm. So, and then I kind of thought, I talked to a lot of people and they said, you know, it's easier to do ear infection in 10 minutes than depression. I should have known better, because by the time I was still practicing, in 10 minutes I had to do ear infection and depression.
Both. Yeah, there aren't enough child psychiatrists, not even close. So pediatricians, by default, we take care of so many mental health issues.
You know, and I really always had this holistic approach. You cannot just address broken finger. You know, even if somebody broke a finger, there was a reason why this kid put their fist in the school.
Right.
So I always kind of try to address everything. And I really like kids. You know how it is. You know, not so many men went for pediatric residency, not being... You know, like we had people, they came into pediatric residency and they left, after a month. Because and like as soon as I see screaming kid, I know what to do.
Right.
So it's kind of like one of those mirrors, you know, and I never thought I'll be in this position where, you know, I had twins and somebody was not checked in. And I know you talked about twins your last podcast. Somebody was not checked in and it was like, 10 years ago, it was bad flu epidemic, which, you know, we had an epidemic, whatever you call it. And one kid was needed oxygen. And I looked in the back and I said, they both need to be transported. And we didn't have enough beds. And I had to put one kid in one hospital and another hospital, you know. So pediatric is my merit. It's just very unfortunate that I don't know how to live it now.
Yeah. Okay. So we both have a love for kids and pediatrics, and we come with this background of, I think when you've lived overseas for a large portion of your childhood, you get a perspective that's a little more holistic, you know, thinking of that healing of the whole person, not just the body or the body part, but the whole person. And there's just physical, there's emotional, there's mental, even spiritual. Something happened now. So we're going to fast forward now. We've been doing pediatrics you've been doing this for a couple decades, I think.
So I finished my high school in 86, and then Soviet Union broke in 91. And then I came here and I did, you know, transitional year, and I did 3 years in pediatric residency, and then I had to work 5 years in rural area to get my green card. And then I finally moved where I wanted to live, in Arizona, and I've been 17 years here in Arizona.
Okay.
So I get more than 20 years.
More than 20 years, yep.
Yeah, practicing, like, you know, seeing kids day in, day out.
Yeah. You know? And so you were in Northern Arizona, maybe you still live there, working for a corporation. And then in December of 2021, so COVID hit early in 2021. Tell us what happened.
You know, so I was supposed actually to go to Australia to do like conference about zinc deficiency and systemic constellations, which is like energetic healing, you know, for ancestry trauma. And then suddenly the conference was canceled. So I didn't go, and I had like 2 weeks kind of to look what's happening, because I had vacation, you know, because I was supposed to go. So I came back to practice after those 2 weeks. In a way, those 2 weeks helped me prepare, because I had time to look, you know. And then I start talking with my patients, which usually what I do, and with their families. And I realized the kids don't get sick. And so I thought blessed. I thought, okay, this is so lucky for us. Let's count our blessings. Kids don't get sick so much with this virus. Let's see what we can do to help families. So I actually prepared even the presentation for mental health crisis, about mental health crisis, because that's what I was seeing. Mm-hmm. I was seeing overweight. I was seeing anxiety. I was seeing post-traumatic stress disorder. The kids kept being born. I was seeing trauma that was induced on kids and their families in delivery rooms. You know, like, so I kind of was like, and as soon as you would go into the room, you kind of knew where family was, because they would be masked or not masked.
Yes.
You know? And then, so I kind of was like, okay, let's see, how can I help people to integrate all these experiences? And initially I had those thoughts, okay, what about making them active? What about putting schools outside? What about vitamin D and zinc? Mm-hmm. And suddenly, you know, all this controlled information start coming in heavier than ever. And I think my first red flags were, you know, I don't know if you have the same system, like the immunizations that they record in the state. And I start seeing that COVID vaccine, which was not officially yet approved for kids, already was in that, you know, I was like, they are preparing this.
Wow. Yeah, we have that system here, but I don't participate anymore. They knocked me out of it a couple years ago. Interesting.
So I saw that. Then I bought American Academy pediatric statement, which was like, you know, how many exams I took, you know, how many money we paid, you know, how we all know that it's not making you better pediatrician. And they say, if you don't promote COVID vaccine, you lose your American Academy of Board certification. I actually went around, you know, my rural area, showing it to everybody else, like family practitioners, because I think at that letter, it was, if I remember that right, internal medicine board obstetric board and pediatric board. And that's when I kind of start feeling that this is going not right direction. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And so actually the managers initially said, you have to fill all the paperwork for mandates because the patients need you. And you know, your primary care provider, you carry right. like several thousand of people. So I initially asked if natural immunity would be accepted, which I had. I checked my natural immunity because usually that's what I do for my patients. Mm-hmm. I had natural immunity. They say, no, unless you're dead or you have an anaphylactic reaction. And even then, you could take another one. That will not be approved. I was like, okay, do I really even want to go towards a religious route? Because in a way, that should be private. You know, what is informed consent? What is religion exemption? I write religion exemption. What is it belief? But I filled the paperwork and they denied. They actually fired three of us. And they said it didn't matter as a provider what religious belief you had, what scientific belief you had. You're out next day. And I was like, what do you think happens to my kids? You know, like my practice, it will be post-traumatic stress disorder for them. We have a plan. The plan was replace me for one day, and they didn't tell my patients why I left.
Wow. So you and two others were given your termination papers, basically. And that's been over a year now, year and a half.
No, that's actually, so maybe that's been December
2021. Oh, 21. So yeah, just a little over half a year, eight, 9 months. What have you done since then?
So I looked for people that kind of think similar. Like, you know, I went to two conferences. You know, American Freedom Conference, and I went to like toxicity conference, environmental conference. You know, like I kind of was looking how I can connect with people that think the same. And, you know, ideally, I would like to create the center for kids with like-minded people. So then I joined Freedom Doctors with Simon Gold, and we're trying to create a telemedicine platform. And by fate, she's now in prison. So that kind of postponed the opening of our telemedicine platform. So I don't want to go to practice in the old, and to create the new requires same-minded people and also requires risk-taking and requires kind of us to unite together. And Zoom helps, but I really would like, you know, physical centers. Yeah. So I'm kind of looking, okay, who wants to come to Northern Arizona and create the center? And how can we use, you know, really money is out there. You know, the money is given to help kids. Mm-hmm. Is that money is going? How can we access that and give kids what they need? You know, what helps them heal?
Yeah. I mean, it feels like our mainstream medical system in this country is broken.
It's broken. See, I like social medicine too. So partly me staying and taking insurances, you know, kids would see me and I could see it like, how is she here? Because they had access and I would do everything I could do. I figure out like how I can get biofeedback for them, labs for them, consultants for them. But now the system is broken. So how do we get the kids good services and use the money or, you know, get the money to get the best for them?
Right. You know? That is the huge dilemma. People with plenty of money can access services outside of the mainstream. But for the majority of people who rely on their insurance, that's going to be a big challenge we have to figure out. You know, what do you think
of how COVID rolled out here, with public health being so powerful, all powerful, to the point where they dictate what the institutions do. They dictate what the hospitals do, and then the hospitals follow suit, or the healthcare systems doing things like what happened to you. I mean, actually losing your profession, that has to be devastating. What are your thoughts about that, and comparing it to where you came from in the Soviet Union?
It's really, so think about it. I did 6 years of medical school. Then I did 5 years of residencies. Then I passed this board exam, first every 10 years, then every 7 years. Then I complied, you know, with every rule they had, which, granted, were more and more rules. And the flu shot, I start questioning, because I could feel my body not responding to it. And like tetanus, I checked my own natural immunity. So there were like more and more systems, then they somehow start really like controlling us and not letting us to be practicing the medicine. And I think EMR was the one of the biggest changes, and I always dictated. And you know, if you could write E infection and give or not give amoxicillin in 3 minutes, and suddenly you enter all that data in 3 pages for the kid to feel better with the cold, then I start questioning really what is, like, we became kind of a money-creating system instead of healing system, and the system was getting more and more complex. And this final step where we kind of mandated or don't mandate it, you need that, you can get religious exemption, you don't get religious exemption, that's not healing for anybody. And that actually, you know, maybe I am finally at the point of my career, because if I would be now in residency, if I would be in medical school, if I would be needing to go and get visas, I could not do what I'm doing right now. And even for me, it's now it's difficult to do this, to risk everything. You know, like my friends, I have a lot of professional friends, and they work in big centers, and they are so intelligent people, and their families went through what my families went through, and they're getting their boosters. And you know, so it does remind me a lot what happened to me, but it also has this worldwide effect. You know, it affects countries worldwide, and it affects civilizations worldwide. And, you know, and then that's a question, what is happening behind the scenes, and how can I contribute at this time of my life to prevent it? And really, like, what is the fight here? Sometimes I don't even get it, because, like, why we're giving immunizations for kids in America and we're not giving them in Sweden? What is different? The body is the same.
Right. You
know? And so why politics dictate us, and why Canada, Australia, and, you know, Europe is affected by it so much? And I'm happy to be in America, but why by giving it to kids in America? I never thought this will happen here.
Yeah. I share your feelings exactly. You know, I read about some of the Scandinavian countries, they're banning it. Nobody under the age of 18 can get that vaccine. What do they know? Well, they know what you and I know.
Yeah.
But our public health officials in this country and the CDC, my only analysis is they're corrupt. Whether they're corrupted by power or money or both, I don't know. But it's certainly not about the health of our children. You and I, as pediatricians, we have to uphold our oath to take care of our patients, take care of the kids, putting kids first. And we've been forced to make tough decisions. I mean, you must be suffering having to, you know, put everything you've put into making your career, and you're kind of reaching the top of your career, and then this happens.
You know, I really did not see this coming, and I really thought I can just practice and be happy. But I don't think you've seen things coming to your life the way they are, you know, because we just want to do what's the best. And then they've, you know, like they did pull rotavirus, and there was what, less than 100 deaths, not even deaths, it wasn't the susceptions. So why we're not pulling something that's killing people, and why nobody's talking that there are now 7 Canadian doctors that are dead? You know, it's like, do you want, really, like, it's kind of like, who can hide deaths? And I never, you know, it's like, it's indescribable on so many levels.
Yeah.
And then I am glad not to be part of the system actually right now, because you know, they can sue me. They can sue you anytime. They cannot sue Pfizer. Mm-hmm. And guess what? In Austria, look what happened. Doctors were said not to, you know, trust in immunizations. And then now they say go for the doctors because we still needed to know better. So, you know, so I kind of like, you know, I'm kind of like thinking, and, you know, from pediatricians, they took our power away. My patients kind of knew, even though I gave them informed consent, that families can feel you. So they knew, because if they would ask me, I said, you know, we didn't study this vaccine. We don't know long-term effects. Let's talk about it. Let's see what risk factors do you have. But then I start seeing that we get those vaccines in pharmacies. And, you know, like pharmacists would send me that record and I would be like, they didn't come to talk with me. They didn't get informed consent.
There's but then no informed consent.
What happens if they get side effect? Who is guilty? Oh, I was your patient. You should have probably called that pharmacy and tell them not to give it to me. You know, there is no winning or losing.
It's insane. So I agree with you 100%. Kids don't get sick from these SARS-CoV-2 viruses. And in fact, as it mutates along, it seems like while it might get more contagious, it's less and less dangerous to the point where it's for children, especially it's a nothing. Why would we ever want to inject kids with a mRNA technology that is not, it's clearly not safe. We have no long-term outcome and won't get it because they allowed Pfizer and, you know, all the companies to vaccinate the unvaxxed arm of their study. So they've eliminated the potential for long-term data, period. Where do we go? What do you think's...
You know, I really think we should get Pfizer back where they should, but they should be responsible. I think responsibility is one of those things we should get back where everybody is responsible. Patient, doctor, and pharmaceuticals. And we should have, like, not somewhere where people get rich, you know, like, meaning, like, where we all from abundance start discussing these are the damages, these are what do we do now? Because, you know, I was thinking I'm attracting, like, a lot of complex patients. And then after all this happened, I read Kennedy's Jr.'s book. And, you know, the chronic illness in kids is staggering. We will not have, we soon will not have pediatrics. We'll have to take care of sick kids, adults. Because, you know, when I start practicing, I don't know how it was for you, we didn't have back pain in 6-year-old. We didn't have headaches in 4-year-old. I wasn't diagnosed then with ulcerative colitis. I had myocarditis maybe once in my career that I diagnosed. And now, you know, they come there like adults.
Anxiety. Never used to see anxiety. And now you have it in grade school.
I know. It's like, and you kind of like, so what do we do? So we really, I think part of that, everybody has to go back. Parents have to be responsible. You know, doctors have to be responsible. Pharmaceutical companies have to be responsible. And then we have to go from there, you know, because this, you know, like there is this victim kind of mentality. And a lot of that is everywhere, you know, and we really, I think, like I always said, okay, freedom is responsibility. To be free, you have to be responsible. Sometimes I'm over responsible. I know that too. Mm-hmm. But I think one of that is, when was that act in Congress when they said pharmaceutical companies cannot be sued?
Yeah, that, 1986.
Right. And that's where I kind of saw this really turned around, because that's such a good business model. Oh, you know,
perfect.
It's like profitable.
Guaranteed profits.
And then another thing, we really have to not have these emergency situations unless they're really emergency. And even if it's an emergency, everybody can take responsibility how they take care of themselves and their loved ones. Because this fact of this emergency, now they can do anything they want to, you know. Mm-hmm. No, even if it's emergency, you can decide what you do in your home, not state, and I can decide what I do, and we can help each other.
Right.
And the hospitals, you know, I think that profit thing, you know, especially in pediatrics, never was profitable. But so that's why actually we don't even have a pediatric unit here. We got donations to build it. They didn't build it because it wasn't profitable. They right. built OB. So how we can say, you know, the kids, it shouldn't be profitable. They should be healthy. We should make them healthy. And that's it.
Yeah. I have to highlight something you said for our viewers, because I don't want you to miss this. You were talking about everybody taking responsibility, pharmaceutical industry, doctors, and parents. Well, parents, I'm speaking to you for this moment. The pharmaceutical industry and the doctors will not take responsibility. That act in 1986 has shielded them and will continue to shield them. So until that gets reversed by the attorneys, those folks who know how to deal with the law, and it's very hard for that to happen, but we know it can happen. But until such a time, you, the parents, absolutely, you're it. Your kids need you to protect them because you're it. Otherwise, they are completely defenseless if you will just accept what the authorities tell you to do. And I'm talking here to Dr. Jura, another fellow pediatrician who's lived overseas, trained overseas and here, and we're telling you the same thing. It's absolutely critical. Touch briefly.
Yeah, and you know, really question everything, you know. Actually, I liked it here. When I came here, people question residents, people question doctors. And then slowly, slowly, it kind of started being really more like it used to be in Soviet Union, where you don't question, you just listen. You know, we have all to question, and there is no answer that's good for every child, that's good for every parent. It's like, individualized, how can everything be good for everybody? It's never true. We all are different.
Absolutely. So individualizing the care of children is so important, and adults for that matter. Thank you. Question everything. That should be our final point, but I'm not going to let you loose just yet because I'm enjoying this conversation. Speak briefly to, people are still getting their information about COVID from mainstream news. And you and I know these are just reporters reading a teleprompter. You know, you're a pediatrician with extensive knowledge and experience that spans the globe. Talk briefly for people about what the state of COVID is now, as far as how scary and dangerous it is for kids and even for adults, asymptomatic spread, vitamins, masking, natural immunity. Give us your overview of what we now know from your perspective.
So when I grew up, you know, we knew that when we watch TV, it doesn't tell us truth. And that kind of, I think, is backbone of me looking for information, that I know that whatever the people tell you, especially if they tell you not to question it, you should look for some other information, which luckily in these days, parents can find. And then they really should look at, you know, other sources. And if somebody tells you it's all safe and effective, and they never really look, and you know, Now the CDC, even like 2 days ago, they are saying things that we said for 2 years, and there's no explanation. They just turned it around. So if anybody really has time to question it, they should. And so looking for information in these days, I would find actually good, like Make America Free Again in your area, or go to Children's Health Defense, or look at your state and look at, pediatric groups, and just kind of talk with other parents, find them on Signal groups, on Telegram groups, and really not be afraid to reach out for another information. I probably especially want to talk with people that maybe didn't have time to seek for information. You know, whatever you can do now, it's still not late to do. You know, you can still look at that and still question, do I need another booster? What do I do for sport physical for my kid? You know, that's actually a big question too. How do I let them exercise or not let them exercise? And that always was a question, you know, even before. So try to look for people that you trust. The trust you cannot buy. You know, you just know deep down, do you trust this or not? And then COVID is not pandemic. It never was. The numbers were inflamed. The PCR test, which I used to use even before they start using it, always have to be used in context of your sickness, and it's not definite. And you always have to see, it's an art. From what are you sick, and from what you die, and from what you live. So live your life as an art. Don't listen to, you know, people that try to simplify it. It's not simple. You know, and right now, if you get sick, do what you always did. Do chicken soup, vitamin D, zinc, stay at home and call somebody that you trust.
So I've got the tough question for you here. I agree with you, but who do we trust? So you have, at the beginning of our talk, you mentioned you have lots of friends in medicine. Some of them are still working in the system. They still trust the narrative, I'm guessing, that the COVID vaccine is the right way to go. They're not pushing back anyway. So if we send people to their pediatricians, you and I know that 95% of the pediatricians out there are under a spell, I think.
And I talked, you know, I have a friend who also is practicing as a locum tenens right now. And she says how difficult it is because she gives informed consent as patients come to her. Then some people actually complain that mm-hmm. they informed consent. You know, I feel we have to start building up really like parallel system where people yeah. can go. And that's really why I reached out to American Freedom Doctors. And I think Children's Health Defense have venues where people can look for that.
I couldn't agree more.
I would just go really like, and I had grandmother that called us. They found us on Signal Group. There is Pediatric Freedom Summit. We actually even did a declaration. We were trying to prevent FDA, you know. So what we do, so somebody has a question. It comes to our Signal Group, which is called Pediatric Freedom Doctors. And then we see in that state, who can practice telemedicine or physical, who can advise their family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, because right now the question is, how do you do that sport physical? How do you get that exemption?
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I think we have to create safe and trustworthy system within every state, and hopefully we'll have nationwide state, and we are still working on it. It's not so easy.
No, absolutely.
I'm, right well, now, I'm Yeah, right now I'm not practicing for that reason, and people reach out because I'm still thinking, I don't want to go back to malpractice insurance. I am looking how to do PMAs, and I still would like to get physical center where people can come, because you know how much easier it is when you see somebody.
Yeah, I'm exactly where you are. I want to have a physical center. I like seeing kids, being able to interact directly eye to eye. So yes, we're going to need physical centers of a parallel system in every state of the union. And the Pediatric Freedom Summit, folks, this is a new upcoming impressive organization. We're going to play for you a brief video just introducing what they're about. And so I hope you enjoy that. And then Dr. Jura, we're going to cross paths, I'm sure, in many, many ways, because we're on the same mission. Give us closing thoughts, some hope for the future.
I feel human kindness will win, you know, and I feel really the kids have to smile, and the kids are our future. I hope really that we will not continue to do lip service for kids and start actually helping them grow and flower and be, you know, this human race that we need on this earth.
That's well said. Natural immunity is powerful, folks. You raise your children in the most natural way possible, and there's going to be a parallel system coming that will support you in that journey. Thank you, Dr. Jura, for your time today.
Thank you.
Welcome, Bernadette Pager. You are a staple of our show, Against the Wind. Thank you for being here. You're the Public Policy Director of Informed Choice Washington. You host an Informed Life Radio. And most importantly, you bring us really, really important new information that's not being covered in any of the mainstream outlets. I'm excited for today's show, your segment, because I know you're bringing some information that some of this was totally new to me about various federations and boards that are directing things in our entire world with relation to vaccines. So jump into it.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Paul. So I want to start by just taking people on a very quick journey, a sampling of how our state legislatures, our elected officials, and our public health agencies are completely captured and working in partnership with the pharmaceutical industry. Here is one. The National Conference of State Legislatures. Most people have never heard of this. They have a big influence. They do a lot of educational presentations. Their members are part of state legislatures. And their stance on vaccination and COVID vaccines in particular all align with the CDC. So you're not going to find anything about vaccine injury, vaccine dangers, vaccine ineffectiveness at a place like this. I encourage you to go down the rabbit hole of this organization. Next, I want to show you an organization called the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. This is another organization. The head, say, like the Secretary of Health of Washington State, probably the commissioner of public health here in Tennessee. They all belong to this association. And they have a very strong stance, and they have for many years, where they oppose any non-medical exemption to vaccination mandates. And they support the ever-tightening of medical exemptions. It's very concerning because they are running our state health response to communicable infections. Again, a place you're not going to find anything about vaccine failure and vaccine dangers from these individuals. Next, we move to another organization called the National Academy for State Health Policy. And this is another one in which various state employees belong to this, and they talk about health issues, but the approach to anything that has a vaccine targeting it is, of course, very pro-vaccine. And you will see that their strategic partners, I do encourage you to go down the rabbit hole of all of these, of who funds them and who they partner with. Their partners are Amazon, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, CVS Health, Kaiser Permanente, all those, right?
So it's so interesting, Bernadette, that all these associations and agencies that our public health officials are a part of, where our public health officials perhaps get a lot of their information, are captured agencies by big business and pharma.
Yeah, exactly. And then one of my favorites is AIM, the Association of Immunization Managers. So in every state and territory of the United States, whoever's running the immunization department belongs to this association. They have a memo of understanding that allows meetings, phone calls, sharing of policy information back and forth with the pharmaceutical reps. They have a policy where they do oppose non-medical exemptions as well. And look at their corporate alliance, Dr. Paul. Their corporate alliance includes, at the platinum level, Merck, Pfizer, Sanofi, Sequoia, Janssen, AstraZeneca.
All the vaccine manufacturers.
Yep. You go to the gold alliance and you're going to get Moderna. They're new to the board here. And you're silver. You go down the road, they are all there. It is really unnerving. And Informed Choice Washington several years ago challenged the state about the membership of our immunization director. And we got a meeting with the Secretary of Health. And after presenting all this conflict of information to him, he says, no, I don't see it that way. I fully support belonging to this. So what can you do when... So the next thing, though, that I want to go to, and I want to spend a little bit more time, is an organization that directly impacts doctors. So we're going to move next to the Federation of State Medical Boards. So this is a massive entity that's been around for a very long time.
I believe, and I read that it was founded in 1913, I believe.
I believe that's what it is. And, you know, We have
a
to
private kind of, organization.
Private organization, Rockefeller involved, Carnegie. We have to remember in the early 1900s, there were hundreds, maybe even over 1,000 homeopathic and naturopathic type universities in the United States. It was a thriving type of medicine that did not feed medical industry, even in those early years. And Rockefeller, being very powerful, you know, wanted the allopathic kind of money model of medicine to survive. And he systematically shut down, squeezed out all of those healing modality. And they're just now in the 1970s slowly began coming back. So this has been around a very long time. And this board has huge powerful impact on what state medical boards are doing. And during this COVID chaos, they sent out a news release, and they sent it to anybody who licenses anyone in medicine, that if a physician, a nurse, any entity is spreading what they consider to be misinformation, even if later on it was proved to be absolutely true, which everything so far has been proven to be true, what our side of the issue is saying, their license is being threatened. And so what I've just given you, just the skimming of showing how everything in medicine in the U.S. today, from the political agencies, our elected agencies, to those agencies that run our health systems, completely owned, captured, influenced by the pharmaceutical industry.
Well, thank you, Bernadette. That is such powerful information about all these agencies. I think we need to pursue this more, and hopefully in a future episode, we can dig a little deeper, and I can share my story about what's actually going on with the medical board with myself. And because it's very fitting with exactly what you've presented. So thank you.
You're welcome. And I would love to do that. You want to do deep dive? Let's go.
Dr. Paul, thanks for watching the show. Please visit doctorsandscience.com. There you can access our members-only section. This show is member-supported. We don't have to take sponsors. We don't have to have anybody controlling the content of our show. This is a huge perk most people aren't aware of. Your membership gives you access to my ebooks, transcripts of every show, PowerPoints from talks I'm giving around the country, and live bonus peeks at behind-the-scenes work we're doing, my off-the-cuff thoughts and reviews on current events. Your support makes all this possible. Thank you. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.